Good morning. Lovely to see you all. If you would take out your bulletin, there is an insert in your bulletin right around the prayers of the people. If you'd pull that insert out, that would be great. The insert says at the top, invitation to respond. And this really is an invitation for you to begin thinking and meditating on these questions right now. And then you can take this home with you and continue through the week. Share your stories with each other if you would like to. I'm going to give you a little bit of time right now. I'm going to read the questions out loud and meditate in whatever way that you feel comfortable. And then we'll begin. When have you wrestled with God? Were you wounded by the experience? Did you come out of that experience wounded but also blessed with a new way of seeing or with a transformed identity? This is a story about a God who comes out of the shadows. This is not a story of peace and quietness, but of confrontation and struggle. This is a story of a mysterious God who meets us face to face, but who leaves us with more questions than answers. This is the story of Jacob. If you don't know the story or if it's been a while, crack open Genesis, take your time. It's a wonderful story. Long ago in ancient history, way back near the beginning, God called Abraham and Sarai from their home country to a new land. And God promised to make their descendants into a great nation, as numerous as the stars are in the sky. That promise was passed down through Isaac, Abraham's son, and his wife, Rebekah, who, as we enter into the story, gives birth to twins. Esau is born first. And close behind him, grasping his heel, is Jacob. Now the set is stage for an epic rivalry between two brothers. Esau is a big, strong, hairy guy, outdoorsy. He loves hunting. He thinks with his gut. Jacob is a smooth-skinned sophisticate who prefers the life of the mind and the company of women back at home. Esau is his father's favorite, and Jacob is his mother's favorite. So the drama begins. Jacob is clever and wily, and after a hunting trip, when Esau returns famished, Jacob bribes Esau into giving away his birthright as a firstborn son for a hot bowl of stew. Then, with the help of his mother, who dresses Jacob in animal skins, he tricks his blind father, Isaac, into giving him the blessing meant for his brother. Esau, as you might imagine, is hopping mad. So Jacob runs for his life to Uncle Laban. There he falls in love with his beautiful cousin Rachel, but he must earn her hand in marriage by working for 7 years for his uncle. Instead, after those 7 years, Laban tricks him into marrying Rachel's older sister, Leah, and he must work for another 7 years to win Rachel's hand. For the record, Jacob is tricked once, but he tricks everyone else several times, and it really pays off. He becomes wealthy, and here's the thing. Despite his skullduggery, his trickery, God loves him. God keeps showing up, once in a dream when he's fleeing his brother Esau. Jacob sees a ladder coming out of heaven and angels ascending and descending to the earth. Another time, as Jacob runs away from his uncle Laban with all his possessions, two angels greet him at a camp. Now the story is about to take a turn. Jacob is a few days out from his hometown, so many years after that initial flight, and he hears that Esau is coming with an army. Oh boy, bad news. So Jacob sends his most precious people and possessions ahead across the stream, and he stays on the other side. Imagine now, as night is falling, what Jacob is feeling. Will tonight be his last night on earth? Will his beloved Rachel and his children be taken from him in the morning? Nothing is certain. He is displaced, literally caught between where he's been and where he hoped to go. Maybe you've been there too. Maybe you're there right now. Jacob knows he needs to sleep just for a few minutes. So he lies back, listening to the sounds of water on rock, like a thousand voices murmuring in the night, the sky above him darkening with each moment that passes. The night is cool. He smells the familiar scent of wood smoke as it winds its way up into a brilliant starlit sky, the same sky his grandfather Abraham looked at and heard God speak to him, the same sky his father Isaac, who never loved Jacob in the way that Jacob longed to be loved, might also be looking into tonight. Then suddenly, from the shadows, two fierce hands grip his shoulders. Unbelievably strong hands. Are they Esau's? Is that you, Esau? But the figure is silent, and Jacob is on his feet in a second to fight for his life. There's no hope of escape now. In the darkness and commotion, Jacob can't see the stranger's face, but a shiver runs up and down his spine. This figure is not human exactly. It is Elohim, something mysterious and divine. Jacob, who has always lived and prospered by his mind, now has to rely on his body, the grip of his hands, the stance of his feet, the feel of his bone and muscle, his animal instincts. All night long, he is locked in combat. At times, the weight of exhaustion and lack of sleep sweeps over him. But he whom he wrestles does not slumber nor sleep, has no need of rest. There is no breath for asking questions, just the sound of two bodies in the dirt by the stream, locked together as if in a strange, writhing embrace. Who is this God who will not let go and will not leave? Who is holding whom? What would happen if Jacob let go? At last, the horizon begins to lighten. Streaks of pink and blue begin to break upon the stream. casting glimmers of light. The wrestler seems to stiffen, darts out a hand, and touches Jacob's hip. Pain explodes and blooms across Jacob's body, down his leg. The stranger speaks for the first time. "Let me go, for day is breaking." Jacob can barely speak, but his mind is sharp even now. "I will not let you go until you bless me." Now, finally, questions can be asked. And so the stranger asks his name, and Jacob answers as simply as he can with the name given to him at birth. Jacob, which means a heel. This is the first time that Jacob has been under pressure and answered honestly and simply. Maybe he knows there's no room anymore for pretense. Perhaps, as he says his name out loud to this mysterious stranger, Jacob flashes back to himself so many years ago, dressed in animal skins, tricking his father by telling him he was Esau. How far away that person seems now after this night of wrestling. Now, at his most vulnerable, Jacob does not lie. Is it weariness, or is it some deeper transformation? Then the stranger replies, "As a father would pick the name of his child, God, who is that stranger, picks a new name for Jacob. Instead of a name that portrays Jacob as a hanger-on, a grasper, and a minor part, God gives him a new name that is full of strength, mystery, and courage. Now you are Israel, literally God wrestler, and God blesses him." When Jacob asks the stranger his name, the stranger deflects. "Why is it that you ask my name?" God has no need to enunciate his name in return. God has met Jacob, wrestled, wounded, blessed, and named him. And that's all Jacob needs to know. God's new name, Jacob's new name, God Wrestler, or Israel, is one that Jacob will bear for the rest of his life. And his name will become the name of an entire nation, a people that God woos and allows to be punished, and to whom God comes back again and again with unconditional love. Not God pleaser, or God obeyer, or even God lover, but God wrestler. The sun rises on a new day and a new Jacob. And the sun throws everything into solid, stark relief. And later, when Esau embraces, not attacks, his brother Jacob, Jacob tells him, "Seeing your face is like seeing the face of God." In our gospel reading today, the parable of the unjust judge, we again find combat, this time in a boxing metaphor. Once again, the advice to us as hearers and listeners is not to let go and let God, or let Jesus take the wheel, but to step right into the fray. In the parable of the gospel reading, the unjust judge is so sick of the persistent widow that in the original Greek, the judge actually says, "Oh, because this widow causes trouble for me, I will give her justice so that she may not, in the end, give me a black eye by her coming." And so the widow's cause prevails, not because she is a strong, powerful boxer, but because even as a marginalized woman with no voice and no power, she just won't let go. And Jesus says, if such a horrible, crooked judge will change his mind, how much more will God grant justice to his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? What do we think of a God who wrestles with us? What is the wound? What is the blessing? What's the new name? Might the wrestling itself be a blessing? Might woundedness be a blessing? And why would a God who loves us lock us in combat? We see the wounds of combat on Jesus, God's Son, as he prays in Gethsemane and sweats drops of blood. We know ourselves what it feels like to brace our arms, to reach for God's shoulders, to push with fury or grief or disbelief. Perhaps we have felt God's breath on our faces as he reaches back tightly to grasp us and says to us, I will not let you go. And we reply to a God who bewilders us, who escapes our naming. I will not let you go until you bless me. I've been wondering this week about my own wrestling. Certainly, I did plenty of that when I was young and shedding many of the ideas that I grew up with, that I was mistaught about God. I wrestled with a religious tradition that too often did not recognize the leadership or equal calling of women, that often rewarded those who sought power over others. Those were battles I fought with ideas and people. But then, as I thought about actual soul and body wrestling, I started to remember things that truly broke me in two: an unjustly lost job and a lost community that we'd built lovingly and with trust for many years, a life-threatening illness that almost took my daughter from us, friends that did everything right and were powerful lights in the world and died young for incomprehensible reasons. Today, I'm wrestling and grieving the Alzheimer's disease that seized my father at a relatively young age, not long after he retired. He and my mother gave their whole lives to God and to the service of God's people. About 50 years ago, they left a comfortable life in the DC suburbs and moved to a remote village in Bangladesh, where my father served at a TB and leprosy hospital. I was born there and spent my earliest years in a place with no plumbing, no electricity. My parents lived and breathed to serve and live alongside the poor, choosing downward financial mobility at every juncture in order to dedicate their lives to God's calling. My father was a bright light who wrote two books about health and healing in God's kingdom and literally put his life on the line over and over again in war-torn areas and in places besieged by natural disasters and poverty. Through all of it, my parents showed me by word and deed what joy is, what it means when your life's passions meld with God's longings. They taught me what it means to live with a loose hold on wealth and possessions and for the good of others, with a deep trust and love in God's goodness. Now, my father's brain is deteriorating. He can no longer hold a meaningful conversation for more than a few moments. The last years of his life, where he and my mother were to travel and to enjoy their grandchildren, have been constricted, limited, and marked by this disease. God waits for me in all of this, inviting me to wrestle, inviting me to grab God's shoulders and with every sinew ask, why? How could you do this? To grieve even as I fight, to come back again and again. I've been wounded. But in my soul's wrestling, I have felt met, loved, and respected. As I ask again and again, who are you, God? I may not receive the answer that makes God as knowable as I might like, but I will feel known. I will hear God calling my name, blessing me, sealing me with a love and mercy that is more persistent than I can ever imagine. This is my God, who gathers up all the broken pieces of my life, all my grief and bitter disappointment, all my sorrow, who keeps my going out and my coming in, who will not let the sun smite me by day nor the moon by night. This is the nature of our faith. Instead of dominating, subduing, and overcoming us, God shows up to us intimately and invites us to engage with everything we are, just as we are. A friend of mine recently went through a long, lonely, desperate wrestling match of her own. Something in me survived, she wrote to me. And as Parker Palmer so beautifully puts it, if that's God, I'll take it. She goes on, the pain of the wound has also started to give way. And on the other side, even the most ordinary moments have taken on a kind of shimmering quality. And I am aware of the many blessings of my life in a way that I wasn't before. I think of her new name, perhaps, as one who has seen joy, or just one who sees shimmering. Don't you love that word, shimmering? It reminds me of what Jacob saw as the sun rose that day. The glittering of a new day's sunshine over the stream. The glimmering that warmed his weary and wounded body. So Jacob called the place Peniel, the story tells us. For Jacob said, I have seen God face to face, and yet my life is preserved. The sun rose upon him as he passed this place where he had seen God face to face, limping because of his hip. Limping, yet alive in a whole new way, with the blessing of God upon him and a new name. I wonder, what wounds do you carry? And what blessings? I wonder, what new name is God even now giving you? Amen.